welcome into a gateway to baseball heaven, our last gateway of August, as the calendar quickly getting to the end of the season with a little bit more urgency than sometimes the Cardinals seem to show. I'm Daniel Shoptoff from C70 at the Bat at C70. With me, as always, is Tara Wellman from Birdseeds and at Tara Wellman on Twitter. You know, Tara, this is a week. The Cardinals played the Padres, who were 10-plus games under 500, and they played the Rays, who are technically in the wild card race, kind of like the Cardinals are technically in the division race. You know, they're right around 500. It felt like if the Cardinals wanted to at least pretend to be in this race a little bit longer, they needed to at least win each series, go 4-2. Instead, they go 2-4, and it's just, I know we've talked about it, and I know we've continued to say this, but how many nails does this coffin need before we just turn the page onto 2018?
Well, I think if you ask Twitter, that happened several weeks ago, but... you know, the frustrating thing about this team is that they keep doing just enough to give themselves a little bit of life. And contrary to what you might have seen on Twitter, they are not mathematically eliminated from the playoffs. It's not how numbers work. But they're close enough that crazy things could happen, like they almost always do in this game. That would launch them into the postseason, but they then follow up those little moments of magic with weeks like this one, where you see missed opportunity after missed opportunity, and you see the weaknesses of this roster continue to be exposed by subpar teams, and that kind of exposure really makes it hard to think that this team is anything other than a basically average team, which has no business being in the postseason.
Yeah, and, you know, I have, as we talked about before the show, I have this idea that somehow they have become magnetically linked to 4.5 games out because no matter how well they do or how bad they do, the other teams around them seem to do about the same and keep them at 4.5. And we saw, I mean, the Cubs went into Philadelphia this weekend and lost 2 of 3. This is a great chance for the Cardinals to, you know, at least cut a game off of that thing and try to get a little bit of momentum, and they're unable to do that. You're right. Bob Nightingale does not understand how mathematically works. however, for practicality purposes, you know, he may have had a point, because I mean, you just can't lose 2 of 3 to the Padres when you're at home, when you're trying to win a division, and expect to get anywhere. Cardinals right now sitting at 65-65, and that feels basically like what this team is. Like you said, mediocre is a word we have thrown around a lot this year, and it doesn't stop being accurate, and that's the problem. The offense seems to be doing okay for the most part, and they sputtered a little bit some this week, but for the most part, it's done all right. But the pitching staff is still struggling. Now, we saw a good outing from Mike Leake, which we didn't know that he still had any, but we saw another struggling outing from Michael Wacha, and this one didn't have a rain delay to blame it on. Where do you stand? I mean, we've seen Wacha be very good this year. We've seen him struggle this year. Is this, you know, hitting a wall? Is this, you know, just what Michael Wacha is? Or is this just a blip and he'll be better in September?
I think, been pretty clear that I'm a bit skeptical on Michael Wacha, and I have been all season. Not because I didn't think he'd have moments where you saw flashes of the guy that everyone thought was the second coming of Adam Wainwright, but because there's just so much unpredictability in just his lack of consistency mechanically. But then when you add to that the unpredictability of the injury that he's dealt with the last couple of years, you kind of feel like this could be it for Michael Wacha at any point. So every time he struggles, every time he has back-to-back games where he doesn't have the he doesn't have control of all of his pitches, and he doesn't seem to have that downward angle that makes him so effective, and he doesn't seem to be the Michael Wacha that's so successful. Whether it's justified or not, it sort of creeps into the back of a lot of people's minds, mine included, that, you know, I wonder if that injury is flaring up again, because he's been used pretty consistently and he's pitched deep into games, and yes, he's been successful, but is this the moment where we see that injury rear its ugly head and all of a sudden it goes downhill for Michael Wacha? So I think the injury, or rather the rain delay in his last start, was a good excuse, as you said, but it's possible that that was enough of a struggle that he just hasn't quite recovered as far as getting back to where he needs to be mechanically, but it's also possible that this is another really low spot for him that may just be the kind of inconsistency we'll see from him, whether the injury is to blame or not.
It's not causation or correlation or anything of that nature, but it is interesting to note that in 7 games following his complete game shutout of the Mets, which we all talked about, you know, he threw 120 pitches on those. it was a great game, and you know, you could argue whether he should stay out there or not. A lot of people thought he should stay out there, and that's fine. But since that time, 7 starts, a 6.03 ERA, 7 home runs in 34 innings. So you're averaging, what, about 4 innings, 5 innings, a little bit less than 5 innings a start. Now, granted, there were some good games in there, but in the last 3 have really somewhat skewed that, because he's got about a 10.22 ERA over the last 3. You know, it's just that inconsistency, which is, you know, inconsistency is another word that we've used quite a bit this year, is a little scary. Especially when, you know, the last three games that he faced, and he's got a 10.22 ERA. Hit batters are hitting .414 against him in that stretch. 4 home runs in 12 innings. They've got an OPS of 1.143. None of those numbers are good. But they're also against teams like Atlanta, Pittsburgh, and Tampa Bay that are not exactly the powerhouses of the division. So, you know, you get to that, you don't know what you're going to get on Michael Wacha. We were really stunned by Mike Leake. Adam Wainwright's out, which may be for the best, because Luke Weaver has pitched well. And then you have this bullpen. It just doesn't feel like there's any way this team can get any kind of traction. You know, even with these head-to-head games with the Cubs still, that keeps them mathematically alive. It's just hard to believe that this team is going to run off another even a 5-game winning streak right now. Seems kind of a stretch for this squad.
Yeah, you know, as the old cliche saying goes, momentum is the next day's starting pitcher. Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's a good thing right now for this team, unless tomorrow's starting pitcher is Luke Weaver. You know, Lance Lynn's are pretty good.
Is.
Conveniently, tonight yeah, it is. Yeah. So, but I don't know that momentum counts when you lose the night before. So, nonetheless. No, it's a struggle, and I think when you add to that the rotation is struggling, and there's not a bullpen that can back them up, it's really hard to get anything going. Because while you may be able to piece together one good game, to put together a series, much less an entire week, is a problem right now. And I think in a lot of respects, that's where fans are the most frustrated, because you know, on the one hand, there seems to be the contingent that sees this season as enough of a lost cause that they've either checked out or they want the front office to just blow it up and move on. I don't think the front office is going to do that, but on the flip side of that, it is very difficult to watch the players, if nothing else, trying to scrape and claw and find a way to hang in to this race, knowing that they don't have the pieces to pull it off and watching the front office not do anything about it. I think there are a lot of people who would like to see or who would have liked to see either a move made to bring in some bullpen help or to see the minor league system utilized a little bit better and bringing someone. I mean, listen, I've been on the Ryan Sheriff bandwagon for a couple of years now, but I don't know that Ryan Sheriff is the solution to the pitching woes for the Cardinals right now, at least not single-handedly. So there are some guys at Memphis that are prospects that are the kind of pitchers that could make a difference, that could push them over the hump. And the fact that the Cardinals to this point have not made a significant move in that direction really seems to, it feels like the front office is kind of checked out too. And that's frustrating from a fan's perspective. I can't imagine what it's like to be the players in that clubhouse, knowing that you're doing everything that you can possibly try to do. And it's not working, and there's not a lot of help coming. So that's the frustrating part of them being close enough, but not good enough.
Yeah, and it's that urgency word that I referenced earlier, and Alan at I'll Meet Me Mutual, we've talked about that number of times. I mean, Ryan Sheriff was it Friday night. Pitched 3 innings of relief when Michael Walker left early. And that was, I think that was, 90% of Twitter expected him to go back to Memphis the next day because they needed to get a fresh arm up, especially with Mike Leake going. But unless I missed something, he didn't. And I feel like that's kind of that lack of urgency as well. I mean, not that Ryan Sheriff should have gone down. I mean, three scoreless innings were great, but, you know, He saved the bullpen some, but the bullpen was still going to be kind of taxed for the next night, especially if Leake went out in the second or third inning like everybody expected him to.
And after 3 innings, Ryan Sheriff likely wasn't going to pitch in the next game.
Oh, yes.
So him being there was not going to be helpful.
Well, it is Mike Matheny, so you can't rule that out. I mean, the fact that Ryan Sheriff hadn't pitched 3 innings in I think a year and a half or something of that nature, and then his major league debut gets thrown out there for 3 innings is
seems about right.
Somewhat telling of something, I think. But anyway, but yeah, I mean that's the thing. He wasn't going to be. I mean he's not going to be available for. I mean he wasn't going to be available the rest of the weekend. He probably will be available on Tuesday when the Cardinals play the Brewers. But you know, if you needed some arms this weekend, you might have had a problem because he wasn't going to pitch. So we kind of saw that on the opposite side, on the hitting side of things, when Dexter Fowler came up sick on Saturday, and then Jed Jerko left, and everybody's like, there's nobody actually left because Carson Kelly can't come into a game. I don't know. It just feels like you're right. They could have brought up a Jack Flaherty. They could have brought up even a John Gant, which is not anybody big, but at least it would have shown that, hey, we're going to try to do something different. And again, they got bailed out. Mike Leake pitched a fairly solid game. A game that, if you get that out of Mike Leake every time, you're fine. What was it, 3 runs over 7 or something like that? Maybe 4. Mm-hmm. A couple solo home runs. I mean, something. I mean, you know, 7 innings is a lot. You know, it was the problem is Mike Leake was doing all that in like the first most of the time.
Right.
So, you know, to get that is a bonus, but that's not what you should have expected out of Mike Leake, the way he was going. And it just feels like, Alan has said to me, he feels like the front office has a plan, and they're just not going to deviate from it. No matter what happens this year, they're just going to stay the course and wait till the off season to really juggle things. And that may be true, and it may be, again, this is a 500 team. It's difficult to, even as close as they are, and as you said, if the Cubs would just play like the Cubs are supposed to play, or the Brewers would play like we thought that they had been playing, this race would be over and we'd be out of our misery. And we wouldn't be expecting them to make, you know, we wouldn't expect Jack Flaherty to make a start when they're 8, 9, 10 games out. And so it just feels like the organization says, this is what this team is. There's no reason to alter timelines for a team that's just not really good enough.
Yeah, and like I said, I think there's some validity to that. I think the way the season has gone makes it hard to believe that the team that won 8 games in a row is the team that can go out there consistently, because that's something we've not seen. I do think it's difficult, and I guess this is where sort of the business of baseball becomes something of a foreign language to me, because I think it's difficult to watch that 8-game streak happen, to see the change in the dynamic of the team itself and of the players on the field. I mean, even in the games that they lost this week, the way that these players have come together to try to put their best on the field, there's part of me that feels like, just throw them a bone. I mean, give them something. You know, they're going out there every day, and they know that that this isn't the way this team was supposed to be playing, and they know that they're capable of better because they've done it. But they also know that they're without Trevor Rosenthal, and they're without Adam Wainwright, and they're without the best versions of most of their starting pitchers right now, much less the bullpen. And, you know, then they've got guys who are sick and guys who are hurt, and they're doing their job going out there every day, trying to regain some of that 8-game streak magic. And they don't have the personnel to do it. And I don't know. I think, I guess on some level, maybe it's the side of me that struggles with the, impersonal nature of the business side of the game, that it's hard to see guys like Yadier Molina or Adam Wainwright, who legitimately don't have that many chances left at making a postseason run, try to rally the troops and try to get everyone not only on the same page but invested and motivated and inspired to go out and win, when the front office doesn't seem to be even remotely interested in playing along.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, it feels like, you know, with Trevor Rosenthal going down for Tommy John surgery this week, out for the rest of this year, probably out most of next year, may have thrown, very legitimately, may have thrown his last pitch for a card as a Cardinal. So, you know, you would think there's a number of veteran relievers out there that you have gone through waivers that you could get for some AA prospect that's not a big deal. Again, like you said, throw them a bone. Give them something. You know, it's not enough to, but at least make them think that the front office is paying attention, or, you know, thinks they have a chance, whatever. I'm not saying, you know, you mortgage the future and try to, you know, make some big blockbuster deal for a Justin Verlander or whatever. But even just something small, you could see that. And you know, I'm sure they have their reasons. I get that. But you're right. It can be a little disheartening, I would think, from the player's point of view, to do that. I did just run a quick numbers, and I don't know what this means. Probably doesn't mean anything. But the Cardinals have had a 8-game winning streak and a 7-game winning streak this year. 2 winning streaks, 15 games. That's 23% of their total wins. I think that's part of our problem, is they have clustered, you know, almost a quarter of their wins this season into 2 weeks. You know, and that's part of the frustration, I think. We don't get that. You get a win here and a couple losses. You get a couple wins here. You just don't get anything put together. And again, it's difficult to see that, no matter what the front office does. Now, you know, the front office still has a couple of days. They might decide to, but it feels like if you're waiting this late into August to bring in a bullpen arm that, you know, is a Jonathan Broxton type, I mean, like I said, some sort of veteran that maybe have a little bit left in the tank, maybe not.
If we're going to go with a veteran reliever, let's at least go with, like, Octavio Dotel, not Jonathan Broxton.
Well, yeah, I get that, but, you know.
Nonetheless.
You know, and Octavio Dotel was probably pitching better than Jonathan Broxton this year. So. Maybe, you know, call him up. I don't know.
He's available.
Yeah. I mean, can't hurt. Maybe Aaron Miles has still got a little bit left on his fastball. So, anyway, it's just, It's difficult to know, and it's really it's the Cardinals are playing games that technically mean something, but it's very difficult to believe that meaning. I guess that's what we really get at. And we'll see how it goes. We'll shift gears a little bit here, and get off the field for a moment, but not on the topic that you think I'm going to. We're not going to talk about the Rally Cat. No, Tara and I have already done that before the show, which was great stuff. Sorry you won't get to hear it. But we'll wait, because I think Tara's going to talk about it on Birdseeds tomorrow, perhaps. But a little bit more interestingly or fun, the Cardinals had their Hall of Fame ceremonies this weekend, as Pepper Martin and Tim McCarver and Mark McGuire went into the Cardinal Hall of Fame. You're just on this year's class. What are your general thoughts about these guys? And I know, you know, Pepper Martin especially, and Tim McCarver, otherwise, you know, you think of him probably as the announcer versus the player. But just in general, is this a good class?
I think it's interesting. I think there's so many people that Cardinals fans want to see in the Hall of Fame that I don't know. I mean, I think Big Mac is pretty obvious for a lot of people. I think there are some others that maybe would have been closer to the top of some fans' lists. But I do think that these are people who played a really significant role for the Cardinals, and it's fun to see, if nothing else, their reactions to still being thought of or remembered as part of the Cardinals story, or in the case of Pepper Martin, what his family still thinks of those days and those memories. And, you know, that's the kind of fairy tale part of baseball, is that you create these memories for other people. And then when you get a chance to kind of go back and relive them through the eyes of other people, you know, that's really special. So I thought it was great to see some of the reactions and some of the emotion involved, and that's always the case. I think there's such a divide, it seems, in the baseball world as far as these guys of the steroid era. But I don't think any of that can take away from the magic that Big Mac created as a Cardinals player, and for so many fans, and for just baseball in general. So, you know, say what you will about the issues of that era. But I think it's great to see, and I think you could see, I mentioned the emotion. I think you could see how much it meant to Mark McGuire himself to have a moment like that wasn't maybe tied to what did or didn't happen or what it might have clouded as far as his legacy. It was just him being a part of Cardinals history, and that seemed to be really significant to him, and that was fun to see as a fan.
You know, I have said it a number of times, and I will continue to say that the Mark McGuire completely changed the trajectory of the Cardinals. Before he comes in, you know, I remember the end of the Brewery days. And again, we tie this to Mark McGuire. It's a lot of it is on ownership. But it was an ownership that was willing to go out and get a Mark McGuire. And, you know, before that, it was you did not associate the Cardinals with any kind of free agents. You didn't associate them with any kind of trade. You did not associate with them with any of the big names in baseball. I mean, they just...
So, like, now...
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay.
They had Ozzy.
Keeping it relevant.
Right, right. so obviously we need to trade for, well, maybe everybody wants to trade for Giancarlo Stanton.
There you
so
go.
Maybe we are reliving history.
Big Mac part two.
That's right. and, I mean, when McGuire came in, and, I mean, that was, I think that not only changed, you know, obviously it changed things on the field with the power and the fans and the attention and all that, but it probably helped change some mindsets of fans especially. Of not being also-rans anymore, of being players in the big pool. And as like somebody pointed out on Twitter today, or I guess maybe Walt Jocketty had mentioned it at some point in time, they probably don't build that new stadium, at least not as much of their own money with it, if it wasn't for what McGuire had done while he was here. And, you know, I think those acquisitions of the 2000s of Edmonds and Roland and things of that nature only come because, you know, McGuire was there and was so successful. So I think that's huge. And so I'm, you know, obviously I'm a little bit biased. I mean, you put 70 in the name for so long. But I do, I still remember 98. That you're right, that magic is there, no matter if you look back at it now, it's a little differently, but at the moment you still remember those moments and how you felt at that moment. Just the, and again, you're kind of seeing that a little bit with Giancarlo Stanton this year, because he's hitting a home run every night, and you know, he's up to 50 right now, and it's kind of crazy to see that. And I think if I was a Miami fan, or the Miami fan, you know, it'd be very exciting to see that regularly. But, you know, as for McCarver, obviously well before my time as a player, and he obviously had a lot of good years there. I'm sure that his time at Fox Sports Midwest over the last 4 years, plus his, you know, of course his national broadcasting, helped that a little bit to raise his attention of his name. I know some people don't like McCarver. I think McCarver has some interesting stories and some interesting ways of looking at baseball. I know a lot of people don't like him, but a lot of people don't like anybody. and as for Pepper Martin, I mean, that's just a name that we know. I mean, we don't, you're right, you have to see it from the daughters and stuff, but we don't, it's hard for us to get a grasp on somebody that far back, but it's still a very good thing that the Cardinals spend so much time honoring not only recent history, but really getting back into their history and getting some attention. I mean, we talked to Ron Waterman when we were there for the Blogger Day, and that's part of why they've been doing these things over the last few years of honoring Red or honoring Gibson, or this year honoring Whitey Herzog with these different promotions and different things, is to try to let these people know that came along after them what these guys meant or what they were doing and what this, you know, what Cardinal history is all about. And that's a big task. Cardinal history is as deep as anybody outside of the Yankees, I would say. And so to try to in educate current fans on what they're doing is a difficult task, but it's an important one. So I like this. I do think you're right. Ray Lankford gets a lot of attention from a lot of people, especially on Twitter. And I can't believe he hasn't made the ballot yet, but I think there's been enough agitation, especially this year, that he'll make the ballot next year, and I think he'll make it in. I think that's going to be, if he doesn't make the ballot, they may put him in on the, the owners have a chance to put people in by themselves, but I think they'll put him now in to be elected by the fans. And so that should be interesting to see how that goes next year. If he doesn't on it next year, then boy, you know, everybody's already melting down. I can't imagine what they'll do. So, anyway, Cardinals start off on a 10-game road trip, and, you know, as bad as things have been, now they go 2 to Milwaukee, and then they spend 8 games out in the West Coast of the Padres and the Giants, two teams that are bad, but as we've seen this week, doesn't really matter. And we get to, you know, get no sleep while we watch them do whatever they do. You know, you and I said at the beginning of the thing, we should start talking about how they should do for next year so they'll actually be good, because every time we talk about what they need to do for this week, they don't. But, I mean, what are you looking for this week, or is there anything that we should take out of this week, or does it really matter?
You know, the later we get, the more it feels like it doesn't much matter. But, like I said, they're frustratingly close. So it's hard to just sort of call it a year, but you know, they go out and lose 4 out of 6 to two teams they had no business losing 4 out of 6 to, and then they have a chance to recover over the next week. I think obviously the games with Milwaukee are very significant if they want to cling to any chances of the division. I think that, you know, they do tend to play pretty well, at least hit pretty well in Milwaukee, so they've got that going for them. But I don't know. It feels a little bit cliche at this point to say it's a big week, because it feels like every week has been that way. But, you know, at this point of the season, you're getting down to the point where this week could be the week that puts them completely out of contention. If they lose two games to Milwaukee and then they go and lose two of three in both of the series on the West Coast, I mean, that's then they might not be mathematically eliminated at that point, but they might as well be, unless the Chicago Cubs just, as we were saying, kind of blow it for themselves and do the same thing in the next week for them. But if that's the case, Milwaukee might just end up taking the division after all. So, you know, it is a big week, but I think more than anything, it's one of the last remaining chances to right the ship, and that's something we have not seen them be able to do with any level of consistency when they get to a point where they're struggling, or when they get to a point where they're close to making a move on the Cubs, and then they just don't.
Yeah. As you point out, the Cubs, they have three with the Pirates, then four with the Braves over the next week. The Brewers obviously have the two games with the Cardinals, and then they have four with the Nationals, so they have their work cut out for them. But it is. It feels like it doesn't really matter what those teams do. Cardinals are going to just kind of match it one way or another. I don't know. I think it's going to be interesting. I mean, if any other pitchers go down, if Mike Leake doesn't respond, if Michael Wacha has another bad outing, it's just so hard to say, you know, that this is. I mean, and again, I think all of us are really to that idea of they're not going to do anything, but even if you want to hold out hope, you have to hope that they can start pitching, yeah. and that pitching just isn't there right now. So, it's going to take some people maybe digging deep and getting some good results and running into, you know, if nothing else, you know, San Francisco and San Diego are good pitcher's parks, so maybe that'll work for them and they keep the ball in the ballpark. Who knows? All right, well, Tara and I will be back with you next week, and we will talk about these games. I guess mainly the Brewers and the Padres, or the Giants, I guess are the first ones. We'll talk about them next week, and then we'll see if we can muster up any more enthusiasm for them then. So for Tara, I'm Daniel. Good night.
Hey, Cardinals fans. Thanks for listening to this week's show. If you liked what you heard, you can find us on iTunes. Just search Gateway to Baseball Heaven under podcasts and click subscribe. While you're there, feel free to give us 5 of those little gold stars or even a quick review. And tune in next time as we break down another week in baseball heaven.